This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Nation, welcome to episode 43 of Chicken Salad. My name is Ben Locke, and let me bring in my co-host. He's a man who will be in a drowning pool covered in his own saliva should his beloved Drew not win the Participation Trophy world title at WrestleMania. It's Callum McDougal.
I will be, but, you know, when he eventually does win, I will be tearing something away. Good evening, Ben. Good evening, one and all. And yes, welcome to this episode. With that thought in your head, with that picture in your head.
As I say, we're less than a minute in, and we've given everybody a lovely image there.
I tell you. Well, everyone knows, if they heard me on Money in the Bank when the man just turned up, didn't even have a match. Imagine what I'm going to be like when he's in a world title match.
Well, you say a world title match.
the name of the title is the World Heavyweight title. The other one is just the WWE Championship. Oh. So in fact, it is bigger, because the belt currently held by Roman is only for that one company. Drew is for the entire world.
So it's not the Participation Trophy then?
No, the one that Cody's going to win to finish his story is going to be the Participation Trophy.
What chapter are we on in the story? Are we on chapter 84 now?
Yeah, so what was that? We came back 2 years ago. This would be chapter 24, unless you cut out the 6 months he was injured, and then you're probably on about 18. It's a very short book.
It'll be a good match. They'll both be good matches, to be fair. I don't know why I'm not being that disingenuous about it. But rather than talking about a WrestleMania from 2024, Callum, what WrestleMania are we talking about tonight?
Well, we are talking about the one that happened in between probably the two best, certainly to this point, or arguably the two best WrestleManias ever, or two of the best. It's WrestleMania 18.
Excellent. And quick soft plug for the Place to Be Nation summits of WrestleMania 17 and 90, which was two part of a three part podcast, although the third part never actually came out.
We do really need to get that done.
Could you imagine if we got back to everybody then? You know that thing we did 2 years ago.
to put this into perspective for people who haven't listened to it, we put off the third part because some of the contingent that were on it were going to WrestleMania 37. We are now approaching
only 3 years ago.
For those keeping count, this is now WrestleMania 40 we're coming up on.
Yeah, so like Callum says, they were probably the two best or most well thought of, probably along with number three. Now this show 18, we'll obviously get into it, but the company at this point, Callum, had an embarrassment of riches, I think it's fair to say.
They did. I mean, they had, just for a couple of weeks. Well, on this one, you're probably about a week shy of, in this time that a year prior, they had their major competition put on a silver platter going, please buy us. And then you had all that talent handed to you. You've almost overnight won a war that you've been fighting for 5 years, and you've got all this. You've hoovered up over the course of the year all this talent, for the most part. And it really hit home to me. This is going to sound really, really strange, I'll just say it now because I've not really made a note of it, but it's just reminded me. A guy like Crash Holly, strangely enough, right, who through the year 2000 was one of the hottest acts in the company. As soon as the invasion happens, he's nowhere to be seen, and he's on this show in the throwaway hardcore bit for about 30 seconds. And this was a guy who was as I say, over as all hell about a year, 18 months previous. Just because of the sheer amount of talent that they've hoovered up, and cash, poor guy's just fallen way and way more down the card.
He has. Now, would you have been too young to have watched this live or the next day?
I didn't watch it live. It was recorded for me. So this was I was full on. So what was this, 2002? So I would have been 11. And I was right into it. Like I was.
Oh yeah.
The invasion was my time, and the lead up to this was. I didn't watch a lot of WCW, but I knew who Hogan and Hall and Nash were. I knew it was a big deal. I knew who the NWO were, but I was in full mark mode at this time. So it's just, yeah, I've got fond memories of just this whole time being a wrestling fan. But I had it recorded. I've probably still got the tape at my mum and dad's somewhere. It was recorded and it was watched a fair few times over the years.
You have just answered my next question, which was going to be the big question, of course. Was it on a video or actual or a digital VIS-style disc? Could you just answer that for me?
Yes, it was a digital Versatile disc. I didn't have a digital Versatile disc for this one. It was on the video home system.
I mean, let's just go on one of our tangents to begin with. Do you remember that time when you used to have the digital video recorder, actually, you know, and that was going to be a big thing on your DVD players, and that sort of died to death quite quickly?
I don't think our DVD player was just a bog standard player. I don't think we ever got a DVD recorder.
Oh, they were the dogs. They should have been a much bigger deal than what they were.
Oh, my dad couldn't even. But my dad would thingy. He would put the tape on when he went to bed, and hopefully. I remember WrestleMania 19. I never saw the end. So I never knew that Brock Lesnar missed a Shooting Star Press at WrestleMania 19 for years after, because my tape got out before the end. Because my dad went to bed too early.
Here's another target reference, kids. You didn't have Video Plus then.
if we did, God bless him, my dad didn't know how to use it. It was just stay up as long as you could, hit play, put on a Sky Sports 1 and hope for the best. More often than not it worked, but for WrestleMania 19, if you remember the German suplex that Kurt hits onto Brock,
yes,
into the turnbuckle. It lasted about another 30 seconds after that and then cut out. So I knew that Brock won. I didn't know anything about the Shooting Star Press. It was just for one of the first times. I mean, I can count in one hand. See, before that WrestleMania Summit that we were talking about, I can count, yeah, in one hand how many times I've seen the last 5 minutes of WrestleMania 19.
You know how sometimes we confuse our American friends with some of our references? So now we're confusing our American friends and Gen Xers by mentioning Video Plus and DVD recorders.
we've just had a couple of folks start, and we were talking about, oh, do you remember I had that on VHS, and from the corner of the office, one of these guys goes, "What's a VHS?" I was just like, when were you born? It goes like 2004. I'm like, oh, for fuck's sake.
You're like, oh, fuck you. Stop being so young.
2004, you should be about six. No, you're actually 20.
He was born in 2004. This show took place in 2002, Callum. So, well, yeah, 2 years before that lad was even born.
Fuck, 22 years ago. So welcome to wrestling's depressing salad.
if we suddenly go more morose throughout the episode, guys, that's why. But let us go to Toronto, Canada for WrestleMania 18. We start with a performance from Saliva, which sadly didn't fall foul of the usual music edits that appear on the network. They will appear later on, as will Drowning Pool, just to warn you. But having to sit through that performance, we then get a truly amazing video package, which introduces the show with various wrestlers telling us what WrestleMania means to them. I really can't do that justice, Karen. That genuinely gives me goosebumps every time I watch that video package, and it might be the best thing about this show.
Starting off hot.
Just to put my opinion out there.
I opened the start and I think I don't remember them singing America the Beautiful and I don't remember them singing O Canada, and then I remembered that the Canadian national anthem was in fact Superstar by Saliva. But yeah, the video package, it's underappreciated. Everyone talks about My Sacrifice and The Lonely Road of Faith, but right in amongst it was this one. And the thing that surprised me about it more than anything is one, Randy Savage was in it, who was persona non grata at the time, up, like even for many, many years after this. But the Ultimate Warrior was very, very prominent in this whole thing.
And gets a few mentions in this show itself, obviously with WrestleMania 6 in mind. But you know, like you say, he wouldn't usually get such a prominent word.
No, so it was to obviously they had him run into the ring at 6. They had him with the belts after 6. But he was in it a lot, and I'm just thinking that is. But I don't ever remember hearing anything they were trying to get him back in 2002. I don't know what the Ultimate Warrior would have for you in 2002, but it was really strange. And it was just like, I get, like, you have the guys, you've got Austin, you've got The Rock, you've got Hogan now back in the good graces, you can put them all in. You had Razor Ramon at 10, Andre's always in these things. But to see even a glimpse of Savage, I think it was even WrestleMania 2, so it wasn't even at 3, but seeing The Warrior, like, he was in it like every 5-10 seconds of a 2-minute package.
Yeah, so if you haven't seen this particular package, it'll be on the Tube Review somewhere. So go do yourself a favour and go watch it, because it's really good. And if I'm saying it's really good, that means, you know, that's not just a begrudging it's really good. It's really good. Our hosts for tonight are JR and the King, and we get a shot at one huge-ass crowd. It gets revealed later on, but there are 68,000 people in the Sky Dome tonight, and it bloody looks like it. They have filled that venue to the rafters. Our opening contest is for the Intercontinental Championship, and it is between the champion, William Regal, and the challenger, Rob Van Dam. Now, Callum, some would say this could be a clash of styles, but these two are amongst the best strikers in the company at this time. So I was pretty confident they'd be able to mesh and have a good match together, which I thought they did for the most part.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. And I think for the most part, it's probably right, because there was a couple of instances where it was a bit clunky. It wasn't clunky. Not clunky that it ruined the match, but there was a wee couple of times where they were maybe half a beat or quarter of a beat off, but it certainly didn't put me off. Having Rob Van Dam come out first for this show was an excellent bit of booking, because he was as hot as anyone in the company, and William Regal has been as hated as anyone in the company since like the middle of the year or the start of last year, and now that he's in an all time run with the Brass Knucks and the IC champion. Although, why somebody didn't tell him that his belt was upside down on the way out, that annoyed me more than it probably should have, unless that is the international sign of distress for a Goodwill ambassador. No one is going to. Maybe that was his thingy. Maybe that instead of having jobber face, he had jobber belt. Classic line from JR in this. RVD's educated feet. One went to Yale, one went to Harvard. That's a belter. I like that. Well done, Jimbo. But yeah, really, it was a good match. It was what you needed to open this show, I think. Gets everyone hyped. Brand new champion that everyone wants to see. And yeah, good effort for both men. So I gave this a nice, solid 2.5 stars.
I went a scooch higher. I went 2.75, because I could have done with another 5-10 minutes of this. I think they get 6, and it's like, even, you know, some of the stuff we get later on, there is a lot of filler in the show, and you're like, could we have not given 5 more minutes to these guys at least?
Yes, I mean, you'll probably come on to it. We had 2 concerts live. we had, well, one was a concert, I suppose, one wasn't necessarily a concert. But yes, there was a lot of unnecessary guff put in. I think even there's some matches you could trim a bit off to give more to this. So I think they were sort of, for the time they had, they put on as probably a good a match as they could possibly have in six and a half minutes. So fair play to them.
I also want to mention, if we did a Move of the Night award, which we don't do, then either that because of his bumping style, either that net breaker or that German, that suplex from Regal would take it, because they were vicious. And it's just the way RVD's body is and the way he contorts it. It's like, fuck me.
Yeah, that looked, I mean, RVD's the only guy who could land flat on his back and still be folded up. Like the proverbial accordion, according to JR. It was the strangest thing. He landed on his back and somehow ended up on his head. It was up there with, if you remember, the RKO that he took when he was getting written off, when he goes arse over tit. It was just, the guy can do some things that the human body shouldn't be able to do.
We get a new champion in that match, and then we go backstage to Lillian Garcia, who's with a smiling Christian, and Lillian asks him if lightning will strike twice tonight, and if we will get another new champion. He reveals that yes, we will, and he doesn't need Diamond Dallas Page, so that's why he turned on him. We get a shot from the top of the CN Tower, which shows the Sky Dome underneath, and that is one of those iconic shots. They did it at WrestleMania 6 as well, and that's probably one of the only reasons you'd want to go to that tower, just so you could do that shot, Callum. I don't know about you.
Oh yeah, I think so. There's no other purpose for it. But I do love it when they did it at WrestleMania 3. I think they did it at one of the WrestleManias in Dallas. Just getting as much of a massive crowd in is just, there's nothing, there's genuinely nothing like a stadium show. It's just for the look and feel of it. So yes, excellent show, even if it is brief.
They do it a lot tonight. I know I mentioned it right at the beginning, but yeah, they highlight this crowd a lot tonight. Yeah. And there's two, you know, good effects and bad effects. We'll get to that later. Our second match, though, is for the European Championship, and it is between the champion DDP as he takes on Christian, who, like a good heel, wants to be announced as being from Tampa and not from Toronto. Now, Callum, this was about five, six minutes, and, you know, a skoosh below the first match, but perfectly competent wrestling by, at this stage, you know, two veterans who know what they're doing.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that this is one of these ones that I feel like it was, and you can say a lot about this is for some of the matches on this card is this is sort of like a thank you, because Christian did really, really well towards the tail end of the invasion from like the breakup of Edge and Christian. DDP had to put up with a lot of utter drivel through the invasion, and this is obviously like him going either we're sorry or thanks for putting up with all the shite that we gave you last year. So DDP comes out and looked genuinely taken aback by the size of the crowd and looked like he was loving just being part of it. Because I suppose this is a guy that was so desperate to join the WWF that he bought himself out of his Time Warner contract so he could be part of the invasion. He just looked as if he was having the time of his life, and I think it's only just dawned on me there. Like, so DDP would have been on the Nitros that were at the Georgia Dome, and they had about 40,000 people there, but there's another. That's all well and good, and 40,000 shouldn't be sniffed at. But there's another almost 30,000 people in that arena.
Oh yeah.
That's to try and put that. That's insane to think about. That this is almost 40. Like, there's thousands of wrestlers that will never ever work in front of 400 people. Never mind 40,000. And this guy's then come out here and there's double the amount of people in there. So I can see why he was taken aback. But the thing that was devastating was they came out to crickets, and it shows you just how much devastation they put on him the year before. If they hadn't done any of that crap, then he's probably coming out to a massive, massive pop. But that is what it is. Hindsight's 2020 and all that. But it was decent. It was inoffensive, and it was good to see DDP get his WrestleMania win. I think that's sort of a nice wee a bookend to this part of his career anyway. And the post match stuff was great. This is the DDP that I remember more than obviously not getting back. That's not a bad thing. That's a good thing. Yeah. I think it's excellent. I gave this 1.75. I mean, it was perfectly fine. Again, there was a couple of missteps, but it's always nice to see a diamond cutter out of nowhere and a DDP one.
I'm not going to say they dropped the ball on Paige, but they could have done so much more with him. Like, they balled him up in the Invasion by making him the Stalker. And, you know, as I said to Grooney on Nation Invasion, at this point, he is still married to Kimberly, and everybody knows he is married to Kimberly, but we've got to suspend belief and think he's going to be interested in Sarah when we know who he's got.
Yeah. At this point in time, the Undertaker, who's trying to defend her, wasn't even interested in her. I don't think they get divorced not long after that.
Still got the tattoo though. Still got the tattoo, yeah.
And DDP still got a Kimberly at home.
That must have been a bitch to cover up, but you know. could you imagine him trying to go on dates with Michelle with a Sarah on his neck?
he couldn't have found somebody else called Sarah. Well, made it a hell of a lot easier.
You know. But yeah, I really enjoyed this. Like, you know, like I say, but you know, the diamond cut was such a great move. Obviously, Orton took it off him, you know, a couple of years later. But oh yeah, all good. The Rock is backstage with Coach and says this will be the biggest match of all time, and he wants Hulkamania tonight in all of its glory. Rock then wants to know if Coach has took his vitamins and said his prayers. He says no. So Rock demands that the coach says his prayers right now in front of everybody. This, of course, leads up to the coach saying, "Word up, G," complete with the Rock's "can't believe it" faith, which causes him to kick the coach away. And he wants to know what will Hogan do when the Rock runs wild on him. This is right up there with the Rock on the Rock promo list, Callum, and it's not a lot to do with the Rock. It's all about the coach on this one.
The Rock and Coach always had some strange chemistry, and very, it was always entertaining. It could be a random SmackDown, it could be WrestleMania ahead of the biggest match in the history of the company at this point in time, possibly. It's always entertaining at this time, because it was very the Rock at this time was very much of his time, and you can appreciate that now that he's in 22 years later trying to do the same shtick, maybe not as good, but at this point in time I was lapping it up, and I'm not afraid to say I was lapping it up watching this as well.
It's just his face after the word OG gets me every time. We then head back to the ring for our next match, which not only is our third match of the night, but is our third title match of the night, as it's for the hardcore title, as the challenger, Goldust, Logan, we're all thinking about, yeah, every time we mention Goldust, we have to mention Logan in passing, and he's taking on the champion, who is, of course, Maven from the first Tough Enough series. We didn't get Tough Enough over here, Callum, so he was just a guy with a decent dropkick at this point. Some would argue that's all he ended up being.
Yeah, I mean, I think Maven had retired by the time that they put the first series of Tough Enough on Sky One. I did eventually come over here, but I was waiting. He had a nice dropkick, but more importantly than that, he had absolutely fantastic entrance music, which they dubbed out.
I think I've got that note. I'm saying you dubbed it. You left all that saliva and drowning bullshit in and that out.
I know, I was just like, it was like, I went very Vito Corleone. I was like, look how they've massacred my boy. He's coming out to, like, stock music number 304. I was just like,
go on, sorry, Kat, I'm
just going.
What I was going to say is, this is just a very bog standard hardcore match. Obviously, they've put him in with Goldust as a veteran just to guide him through it. But we get, for the first time in a while, some 24/7 hardcore shenanigans right at the end.
Yeah, I think, I mean, I think they've obviously, because the match doesn't go very long at all, and obviously it will, for anyone that's, I don't think we're doing spoilers now, but it does obviously go through the night. So you've got that sort of running story through the whole show. They obviously just wanted Maven to get on the show for like some tough enough hype, and as you say, Goldust is guiding him through, because right, the guy JR mentioned it a year ago, Maven was a school teacher, and now he's defending, albeit the hardcore title, he's defending a title at WrestleMania. Goldust is the perfect guy to put him in with. He's not going to embarrass him. He's going to make sure that he hits all his spots, make sure he does everything right, and because he must have been nervous as all hell. I did have a note about his drop kick. It was a very nice drop kick.
Oh yeah.
Albeit we missed the thingy that missed the slightly whiffed on the trash can shot, or the Mave Dominator, as I called it.
Very good.
Thank you. But yeah, I think it was fun. And then obviously Spike coming out at the end sort of gives us our story for the rest of the night.
I didn't bother rating it because it is literally like 2 minutes long until Spike comes out, so I didn't even bother rating it. On Dropkick Cast, he would definitely get an honourable mention. I don't think he'd get the full episode, but he'd get an honourable mention, certainly.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the guy was thingy. He missed it. The thing was, he threw the bin at Goldust, who's, you know, at least 6 feet. Goldust isn't a small man. And the reason that he missed it was because he jumped too high. I mean, the vertical leap on the man was very impressive. Fair play.
It certainly was. I mean, yeah, we're saying a ski whiff here, but like you said, there's certain botches of ski whiff you can kind of explain away.
Yeah. He was too physically impressive for the move that he was wanting to hit, which is a very strange thing.
So our next segment is another performance from this time from Drowning Pool, who play a song with a video of tonight's main event, as I bless the Lord that we still have the chapters included on our version of the network here in the UK, as I was able to skip to the next part, Callum. I don't know if you did the same, rather than watch that song.
I did. I mean, I watched a wee bit of it to see if I could remember the words to tear away. Yes, I do. But then after that, because I'm going to, it was one of these ones I was 99% sure I was going to see it before the main event anyway.
We then head to the back where Crash Holly, who won the hardcore title, I think we mentioned that, but he actually won the hardcore title at the end of that match. But so he's now in the back. Oh, Spike won the title. Sorry, let me guess.
Spike won the title, yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Spike won the title. Crash ran after him, as did Maven and Goldust, and somehow Crash is the only one who actually caught up with Spike. We lost the other two gentlemen. Al Snow then decides to run through some boxes in a golf car, which I thought was a rather lovely moment to see, and Hurricane flies in on a pulley to kick Spike and then win the title. Al comes back, but he's too late as the pins happen and Hurricane is away, and that has to be the easiest bit of money those gentlemen have ever earned. Callum, I don't know how you are.
Yeah, I mean, that's a WrestleMania payday for Al Snow to basically have been a jackass stunt. I mean, that looked fun. Not going to lie. The hurricane was, God bless Gregory Helms, honest to God. Made that gimmick work when it should never, ever had any right of working. So I think it's just, I'm going to say this, I'm going to say this for most of the hardcore title stuff tonight. It was just, it was inoffensive nonsense. It was brilliant.
In 2024, in a major pay-per-view, we have a guy falling off the top rope, crashing through some glass. In this pay-per-view in 2002, we have a guy crashing through a bunch of empty cardboard boxes. Wrestling really has moved on, kids.
Yes. But yes.
You can say it if you didn't like it. You can say it. I'm not going to take offence.
The Sting one was fine, despite the fact that he's 64 years old and doesn't need to do it anymore. And the Darby one, I'm just thinking, glass isn't a wonderful thing to break your fall. And if there's only that between you and a concrete floor, then.
As his back showed about a minute later.
The thing was, I saw it and I'm thinking, those chairs, I don't think that, were the chairs meant to break his fall? Because they certainly didn't.
I think they were literally there just to hold the glass.
Jesus, man. Put a crash mat down, sir.
Our next match in the ring, Pitts, Kurt Angle versus Kane. Now, my first note, Callum, reads, this should be a banger. Kane was probably at his best body-wise at this point. Kane in 2001-2002 was an absolute beast, and I will defend his honour in this time period to anybody. But if you remember our last episode, Callum, we spent quite a bit of time talking about the Olympics. I mean, I'm sure you remember. You've got a love of that event, same as what I have.
Yes, I do remember that. I remember we went in depth on our wonderful four-man Bob Bronze in Nagano was 1998. I think we're just coming up on Salt Lake City 2002.
Yeah, well, we're actually past Salt Lake City.
Oh, are we?
Because Kurt, the reason I mentioned it is because Kurt in his promo lets us know that if he won his gold medal, like Canada's figure skaters won theirs, he'd want to shoot himself. If you do not remember what happened in 2002, basically the French judge at the Olympic figure skating fixed it so the would win.
Yes, I do remember that now that you say that. Yes,
and Canada and the rest of the world put up quite a stink about it, so they had to basically change. Well, they didn't change the results. So, well, they changed the results to say that both teams would win a gold medal. Now, if you've not seen it on Netflix, I can't recommend enough the series of Bad Sport, and one of the episodes on that is all about this particular event, not WrestleMania 18, the figure skating. So go out your way and watch that if you haven't. It's only about an hour long. It's very, very good indeed.
I also remember Alan Baxter, if you remember that guy, who's a downhill skier, got his silver medal taken off him because of his inhaler.
Well, you know, just that's just discriminatory. Now, I said, Callum, this match should be a banger. They reached a gear, maybe a third gear, but I feel they could have gone to a fourth of it, and they just never did. This is literally just punches and suplexes.
Yeah, I was thinking back on this as well. Now, Kane was really good in 2001. Some of the stuff, sort of middle of the invasion. I'm looking at you, the match with Chronic, and I'm looking at like not great. I mean, to be fair, I think me and you could have been in that match, and The Undertaker and Kane could have got a better match out of us than they got out of Chronic that night.
Maybe.
We would have won as well. We'd have taken them.
We'd make a very good tag team.
I think we would do. But the man managed to get a really, really good match out of Test at No Mercy. I remember that. I mean, so he is a bit of a miracle worker. Angle was. At his first peak in 2001.
That's quite something to think of, isn't it? The fact that he had several peaks.
Just when you think he's on the way down, he then tries to find another peak. I think you guys are just about to hit peak number two or three on Highway to the Impact Zone.
I would say three, because I would include the 2005 Sean stuff as his second peak.
Yes, oh yes, absolutely. Note to self, at WrestleMania 21 next year. Just to do that match. but yeah, so it was strange. Now, this is a bit of a clash of styles as well, because Kane, you know, isn't the most agile, isn't the most mobile of guys. He can be when he wants to be, and sort of later on in the year, like post-injury comeback, he is a bit more mobile. But at this point in time, I don't know if he's working hard or not, because he doesn't last much longer, if I remember correctly. Doesn't last much longer after this until he's taken out by the NWO. So he might be working hard at this point. But there were some things in this that were really good. Like Kane hit an enziguri, which, to be fair, is quite impressive. My guy who is 6'10" or 6'8", whatever it is. 7 foot tall, if you're to believe JR. Angle had a top rope belly to belly, which, you know, it takes two to tango in that one. So the big man held his own there. Couple of things that they did as well that doesn't get done very often. Kurt hits Kane with the bell before the bell, obviously, because he has the bell in his hand. But like, the use of a weapon before the bell, you can't get DQ'd because the match hasn't started.
Exactly.
Needs to be more of that. That doesn't happen often enough. Masked wrestlers, try and take it off or turn it round. Because if the guy can't see or he doesn't want his mask to come off, he's going to be more focused on that. Angle almost gets the win at that point. That needs to happen more often. Match is solid a bit because you've got TNA officiating at the end. Angle's feet were on the ropes. Kane's shoulders, both of them, at some point were up. And I'm sure it was Brian Hebner. I think he ended up in TNA. This is a fix. The TNA officiating has infiltrated WrestleMania 18. But, you know...
You don't just get the bad officiating. You get bad... just botched roll up as well, which, you know, just on a botched roll up in the ropes.
Yeah, because it was one of these ones as well. I think in practice, or it sort of in their head, it sounded like a good idea. But Angle was up, and then everything seemed to stop, and then we remembered that Kane has got a near 7 foot frame to try and tuck, like, but it's you know, I'm just thinking of pure body physics here. I'm genuinely not trying to take the piss out of the guy. It must be really difficult for him to get into a position where he could do a fairly straightforward forward roll, especially when there's a guy underneath him. It was just one of these ones that didn't really seem as if it was ever going to work, purely for the size of the guy.
When you're 7 foot and you are at this point in his little career and life, you are genuine 7 foot of muscle.
Yeah.
Like trying to do like any kind of fancy wrestling move probably is a bit of a mistake.
Again, going back to the Olympics, come back to me in October, listeners, and show me what country put a seven foot 300-pound man on the floor apparatus during the gymnastics. there's a reason why gymnasts are 5 foot nothing and like built like a twig.
Now, I mentioned earlier on in the first match, like if we did a move of the night, there is also in this match an absolute beautiful and amazing, given what we just discussed about body types, amazing belly-to-belly overhead by Kurt in this match, which was just unreal. I mean, there has been a lot said about Angle at this point, whether he should have been, you know, in the main event rather than be given this mid-card match. But I can see why they did. I understand why they went this way.
Yeah. If Triple H hadn't got injured, Kurt Angle would have been in the main event. I could have easily seen a situation where it was Kurt Angle against someone in the main. Maybe the Rock. I don't think it wouldn't have been Jericho. Maybe The Rock, or maybe Angle would have, because apparently Angle was meant to be the thingy. He was meant to be the guy winning the Undisputed title at Vengeance, so he might be defending the title in the main event. Triple H getting injured, because we saw it with Cody as well. Like, because I think you were on the live watch the night that we did Hell in a Cell, and you saw how bad Cody's injury was, and everyone's first thought was, well, he's winning the Rumble.
Yes.
So I think that's the only reason why it the sort of the cards fell the way they did. I think he was a victim of circumstances completely out with his control. And then it had to be Jericho in the main event because, one, they weren't going to have him lose the title so quickly after this historic win. But also it worked into the story that Jericho was essentially the guy that put Triple H out. As soon as Triple H is going to win, as soon as he's cleared to come back and win the Rumble, it had to be Chris Jericho.
I mean, I'm saying all this like I'm being overly negative on the match, but I don't know about you, but I still went 3 stars on it, but that was just due to Kurt's talent level at this point was just so far ahead of 99.9% of the wrestlers on the planet in 2002.
Yeah, I went 2.75. I went a scooch lower. I went 2.75. I mean, Kane did hold his own. The start of the match was really slow. It was better than I remembered it being. But the start of the match was quite slow. But when they got into it, it was great. And I said this, I've said this about somebody else later on. But Kurt Angle, at his worst, is still better than the vast majority of people on this roster. The guy was different. The guy was different gravy.
He was absolutely unreal. To the back now, where Hurricane has ended up in the Godfather's locker room with the ladies comparing boob sizes. This gets Hurricane all hot and flustered, and the Godfather runs in and finds him, but Hurricane gets out before he can do any more damage. I don't know about the Hurricane getting hot and flustered. Yes, that was quite the shot.
This is, it's been a while since I've watched this show. It's probably, I would say, a good 10, 15 years. I've never watched it on the network. And so it's been since whenever we last had a VHS player. So I was but a boy and very innocent. So this was the first time I've actually seen this skit with adult eyes. And I'm just thinking, that went right over my head. I've just looked at it because I hear King make some joke and I rewound it. And I'm just thinking, oh, that's what they're doing. They're doing the old Austin Powers shadow. but I'm just like, brilliant. It was just one of these ones going, that is so fucking stupid. But it was because it's the first time I'm seeing it where it's not going over my head. I must say I did let out a chuckle.
Our next match in the ring is between The Undertaker and Ric Flair. We get a video package of one which shows Flair didn't want to have the match, but The Undertaker attacks Arn Anderson and David Flair, so Rick has no option but to take the match because Flair is threatening the rest of his family. In a board meeting, because, you know, that's really good use of your programming a week before the biggest show of the year, Vince McMahon takes back control of the company as a result of Rick wanting to go through the match. As a result, Vince makes this match a no DQ contest. Now, two legends, Callum. Two legends in 2002. Two legends who can still go. I think it's fair to say in 2002 they can do that. However, giving these said two legends 20 minutes maybe wasn't the best idea in the world.
No. The first half of this match was painful. It was really, really, I found it mind-numbingly boring. This match wasn't as good as I remembered. I'll just put that out there just now.
Yeah, same.
I think I had this in my top 100 for the GWWE a few years back now, but it was certainly wasn't as good as I remembered. It was all downhill straight away when the first one of the first things that JR said was when the Undertaker attacked a disabled great like Arn Anderson. Like, for fuck's sake, mate. He's still like he's not like he's still up and walking about. He's still fitter than you.
He's retired in ring competition. He's still active.
It's not as if he's a vegetable. It's very strange. I'm like, okay, well, fair enough. Don't know what Arn Anderson did to you this morning, JR, but there we go. It was fine. You had the you could obviously see that Flair was, because towards the end, like the story is that he wore the T-shirt for his match with Sting on the last Nitro because he didn't like the way he looked, and then he was a bit self-conscious about the match with Vince at the Rumble. And you can obviously Flair seems to have got his groove back, because first thing he does, buff, like it's 1985 again. Blade right to the forehead, gusher from Ric Flair, 1985 Nature Boy is back. I get that, obviously this is only, I don't know if they were playing up that this was Ric Flair's, they weren't daft enough to play up, it's only his second match in, what, 10 years, because he left the WWF in 93, but it's only his second match in at least a year. I get that he wasn't going to go up against The Undertaker move for move, but the physical dissection and the dominance by The Undertaker was painfully slow. I mean, this went back to the worst of The Undertaker when he was fighting the big guy in the month, like Bundy and Giant Gonzalez and all that. It's not saying it was as bad as that, but it had that aura about it. The one thing I did notice was it was Lil Nitch that was the referee. He was playing a big, he obviously wasn't getting in the way, but every time he had a big move, you could see he was getting physically pained, and it was playing into, I don't know if it was playing into that relationship that they had before, but as bad as the first half was, the Arn Anderson spinebuster spot is an all-time WrestleMania moment.
Is that the greatest interference ever?
In terms of a pop
moment.
It is up there with, if Austin for Mankind winning the title is number one, this is 1A. This is unbelievable.
Maybe Linda rising up from a chair.
Yes. Yeah, but in terms of WrestleMania moments, there will not be one like that. I don't think we're hyperbolizing when we say this is a WrestleMania moment that is in the top five with the body slam and body the handshake and the spear from the ladder from the year before. It was just like, it comes out of nowhere. You just see him come in, and for a guy who's allegedly disabled, hits a spine buster as good as he ever hit. And he was bumping about like crazy. He got in that ring, popped up, hit that spinebuster like Arn Anderson of 1985. I mean, we never saw a spinebuster as good as that in Croc and Roll the whole time we did the show. It wasn't as good as I remembered. It was a bit crap before the Arn spot. It then built up a bit at that point, but I think this is going to be an award winner at the end of the night. So I went 2 on it. Which might be a bit generous.
I went 2.5 on it. So yeah, we're reasonable ballpark. The first half of the match, if I'm being polite, I think we could describe as glacial pace.
Yes,
that's being polite and, like you say, generous.
Very polite.
Like you say, this that kind of piece works fine when it's Taker versus the Monster of the Month. But this is, even though he's a 50-plus-year-old man, this is still a guy who can go. He might be a bit conscious, but he can still go.
Well, you look at, we talked about him there. Sting was 62 or 64 or something. He was in his 60s anyway. Mm. Still having... And he was certainly at least 60 when he started in AEW, and we're looking at guys like Orton, Styles, all these guys.
Styles nearly 50, isn't he?
Yeah, they're all 40 plus. Finn Balor's at the tail end of his 30s. But see, if you look after yourself and you're sensible about it, you can go for as long as you want. These guys aren't even, we're talking about guys that are in their 40s, don't even look close to retiring.
And fair play to Rick, body conscious, but he was being too hard on himself. He was still in good shape.
Yeah, and he was still in good shape, and obviously he comes back full time, because so he's still got it. I mean, he's not thingy. He's not Ric Flair of the late 80s, but he's still better than most.
And to your point, sorry, I've cut in again.
To your point,
you know, Taker is, you know, in, let's say, I don't know how old he is now, but like he must be about 40 at this point. And he was still full-time for a good 8-9 years after this.
Yeah. He was still full-time heading in towards his 50s. Sean was heading towards his 50s, I think, when he was still going. And Shawn Michaels retired when he was still one of the very best. So it doesn't, the whole, I think it's all very, it's an easy target to mention guys who are older. Flair only looked really old when he got to TNA.
Mm.
He's not looked after himself when he got by the time he got to TNA. Let's be honest.
He reminded me here. I don't know how you felt, like certainly watching him. You know, these sort of 6 months from when he made his re-debut back in the company, he looks almost statesman-like.
Mm-hmm.
And then obviously he gets the confidence once he's under with Triple H, and it's all, you know. I think he's just one of those examples where it's all in your head. If you've still got it, which, you know, I'm not going to do the chant, but if you've still got it. You know, much like a football, like a defender and footballer, first yards in your head, and it's the same kind of principle.
It reminds me very much of Flair when he was, you know, the sort of he was coming across as in the run up to Starrcade '93, when he's going against Vader, he's coming across as a bit vulnerable, and he doesn't know if he can still do it or not, and like all that sort of thing. So he comes in, and that's that stage of his career. Doesn't know if he can still do it, potentially. There's maybe a bit of vulnerability there, a chink in the armour of thing. He's certainly not the cocky nature boy as he would have it. And then you get to 94, and Hogan comes in, and then the real nature boy comes out. And then by the time 95 comes, you've got the thingy, the horsemen are back together, and he's back in full swing. The savage feud
happens. Whereas here, he's it's like he's that character, but behind the scenes, like if you know what you're looking for, it's one of those where, you know, because in front of the camera they're playing the, you know, he's got to have this match, I need to have this match sort of thing, and whereas you could tell like there was something just missing slightly, and whether that was in the match design, you know, whether that showed up in the match design, I'm not quite sure, but for whatever reason. They were going for epic, and they just never got there.
Yeah, it was. I think they were. I don't know if it was a case of they were trying to let him feel his way in, but he took. It was almost as if they gave him too much time to feel his way in, or he needed too much time to feel his way in. And then it was almost as like the band were back together. As soon as Arn came out and hit that spinebuster, flicked, and he's just like, right, here we go. A couple of woos later, and the old Ric Flair's back.
Also, in this match, Callum, speaking of his opponent, we get the first mention at the beginning of the match. We obviously get he's 9-0 at WrestleMania, and at the end of the match, we get the 10 put up. I think this was the first time it wasn't even called the streak at this point, but certainly the undefeated record was being mentioned.
Yeah, and that was. Because I think the year before the thingy, they mentioned it very, very briefly towards the end. But I think this is now they were maybe trying to make a thing of it.
Yeah, this is the first attempt to make it a thing. I think, I'm with you there. So after the match, we then go backstage where Booker T is being interviewed, and he says he's intelligent because he wears glasses and he did a thesis at high school on Einstein's theory of relatives, and I've got to admit that popped to me pretty hard. I'm not gonna lie. So that leads to our next match, which is between Booker T and Edge. My first note reads, yes, this really is about shampoo. The sign at ringside confirms this, and how pleased I am to hear Rob Zombie for Edge. So he makes the music edit, at least. Now, these two, much like that Kane Angle match, should have been an absolute banger, but unlike that match, this really wasn't calm. This was just bad. I'm sorry, this was just bad.
wasn't the best effort that these guys would ever have. Can't blame it on a, can't really blame it on a clash of styles. Can't really blame. Again, they were given not a lot of time. This is another match that was about six minutes.
Yeah, it's being given another 5 minutes on top.
I think this is all about Booker T's first WrestleMania, because he was other than DDP, he was the biggest star they got from WCW. And I can imagine he'd been one of the guys that when they were looking at who they wanted to bring in, they must have had their eye on him. I imagine they must have had their eye on him for a while before even the takeover. Booker at this time was excellent. Please don't shout at me, Sean Kidd, for saying that.
We've been praising Sting enough tonight. He'll switch off.
It's too much Sting praise, too much Booker praise. It's just awful. Edge getting the big match in front of his home crowd again. That's something maybe to say thank you for having such a good 2001. Not that your place on WrestleMania should be a thank you. You should have to earn it. But I think these guys probably did earn it. For the invasion stuff.
This is before you had pointless battle royals for that very reason.
Yeah. But this is WrestleMania. It's not. And the thing that I pointed back to was, if you remember Kane and Jericho's feud at the end of 2000, where it started over Jericho spilling coffee over Kane.
Yes.
And it was. Kane's whole thing was, you think this is about coffee? This is about more than coffee. And it had sort of the element of it that it was Kane was jealous of Jericho because he was a pretty boy and Kane was a disfigured monster, and you had all that subtext to it. This literally was about jealousy over a Japanese shampoo commercial. this is WrestleMania, for God's sake, guys. Come on. But it was fine. Nothing more, nothing less. You get a WrestleMania spin of Rooney. Edge got his win in Toronto. It was fine. It was there. But that's the worst indictment of a match you can have at WrestleMania. Matches on WrestleMania shouldn't just be there.
When you get a 6 minute match and there are four very noticeable botches in it, you can maybe chalk one up to nerves, but four, I just don't know what was going on here. But what I will say about one of the botches, which is the scissor kick one, you got to see the mechanics of the move, which you don't get to see that very often. So for all our younger people who want to learn how to become a wrestler and you want to learn how to take a scissors kick, you drop down at the moment of impact, not like 10 seconds before, like Edge did.
I mean, there is that. It's thingy. It's that's not how they showed you how to do it on that. Remember the wrestling is scripted thing that had Salem the Cat from Sabrina the Teenage Witch voicing over Harley Race in a mask?
Good old Harley.
Harley Race and Sarge Slaughter in a mask.
But yeah,
that is what they want you to think.
I went 1.5 stars on it. So if that gets me the shit take tonight, I don't care, because I was very disappointed in this.
I went 2 on it. It wasn't fantastic.
Must do better, gentlemen. Let's go with that. You know, Time constraints and nerves should not result in 4 noticeable botches. That's just me being picky.
No.
Okay, I think at that point we should call an end to the first half, because we have got not one, not two, but 3 main events in the second half of the show. So, for Callum McDougall, I'm Ben Locke, and we will be talking all things WrestleMania 18. On the other side. Lucky you were born that far away, so we could both make fun of distance. Lucky that I'm never foreign. Place to Be Nation, welcome back to part two of episode number 43 of Chicken Salad. My name is Ben Lock. I'm here with Callum McDougall, and we are talking all things WrestleMania 18. So let's get back to it. And we head backstage where the Hurricane is trying to leave, but Coach grabs an interview, and Hurricane denies he is a horror perv. Molly tries to get him to leave, but hits him with a frying pan to win the title and run off. We then get back to the ring, and our next match is between Stone Cold Steve Austin and Skull. Now, Callum, in the first part, I mentioned a match between two legends. You know, two people that could still go in 2002, and I feel like I'm always repeating myself here because this match didn't reach the heights that it should have done. But in this case, it was more to do with one competitor wanted absolutely fuck all to do with the other guy he was in the ring with.
Yeah, it was a very, very unprofessional performance by the referee. Obviously, the match should have been Austin against Hogan. For whatever reason, that didn't work. It might not have worked for me, brother. Or hell no, it might not have worked for me. Because it's obviously not that Hogan didn't want to job. Spoilers. So obviously this isn't the match that Austin wanted. But beggars can't be choosers, and despite the fact that you're one of the biggest stars in the history of the sport, that just makes you the biggest beggar. But it just also means that you still, just because you're the biggest beggar, still doesn't mean you can be choosy, And it's Scott Hall, right? Obviously, never hit the heights of. As Razor Ramon, he was never a main event as Razor Ramon. He was always just like, if there was the glass ceiling that Razor Ramon couldn't break through, it was one of these ones that his face was right smooshed up against it. But Scott Hall, as NWO Scott Hall, is still a big match. If you gave anyone else on this show, if you gave Angle Scott Hall, you'd have had a hell of a match. If you gave Edge Scott Hall, you probably would have had a hell of a match. Because this is another guy, I mentioned it in the first half with Kurt Angle. Scott Hall, even at his worst, is still better than a lot of people. Because it's one of these ones, when he gets in front of that camera and the bell rings, unless he is absolutely hammered like he had been sometimes, he's still better than a lot of people. So this should have been a good match. You had the NWO shenanigans. You had Nash on the outside, who the crowd loved. I mean, they popped massive when the big man walked through. And Scott Hall, obviously, just cool as fuck with the entrance, come back to the entrance. But, and do you know what? Even Kevin Nash turned up to work because he even put on a wee bit of a sprint. Did you see that on the outside? Trying to break up the pin. And the big man, it was like prime Usain Bolt on the outside. It was a bit better than I remembered, but it should have been even better than that. You get the iconic stunner. The match was perfectly fine, but you're absolutely right in what you say, that this match was worse than it should be. Because even not trying, these two should have still had a better match than this, I think. And as you say, it's nothing to do with Scott Hall. Austin just didn't. He could have been anywhere else in the world.
Yes, I'm trying to remember my timeline from 2002. Nash isn't like it. Nash isn't injured at this point, is he? They just don't give him a match.
No, because I don't know if one of the original things was there was meant to be a tag match. I can't remember who was. It was meant to be the Outsiders. I can't remember now. Was maybe the handicap match that they did on Raw?
I've said that to you before, haven't I? That they should have put the handicap match here.
I think that was maybe what it was meant to be. But there was definitely Nash wasn't injured at this point. I just think it was a case of the thought that they would get a better match out of Scott Hall. I don't know. I mean, I think Austin at this point in time, just as you say, couldn't give a fuck who he was in the ring with. The Hogan match wasn't happening, and everything else was a downgrade at that point.
Or even just going from what you were saying, even put Angle in there as a tag partner for Austin.
Yeah,
and do a tag match. If all Austin wants to do is just come in, just stomp a mud hole and hit a stunner, you can do that at the end, and you know Angle could play face and peril for a while.
Mm. Or you could have had thingy. You could have had. You lose a match for the Undertaker, albeit, but you could put Flair as his partner because Flair was the one that warned Vince McMahon against the NWO.
Yes.
And that would have thingy, and that would have killed two birds with one stone, nearly, because you have Nash in there, you take some of the spotlight away from Austin, and you can hide Ric Flair in that match as well if he's not feeling 100%.
Yeah, that's true. That's a good idea.
But this was just, I think I gave it 2.5 because it was perfectly fine. It wasn't the worst thing that was on this show, but it should have been. You're 110 million% right when you say this should have been much better than it was.
This, I think, genuinely might be one of this might be the first time we have got a major disparity between our ratings. I went 1 star, and I'm not that far tight. It was. I know Austin matches are just punches and kicks, but that's literally a punches and this match was punches, kicks, stunners, and a fall away slam. That was it.
But I get that. I just think it was one of these ones that I think this was when like Hall and Nash and Hogan were in the mindset that they've got to at least try and play ball. Or they respected Vince McMahon and the WWF enough that they would play ball. And if they wanted Austin to go over strong, then Scott Hall would put him over strong. And then he was going to take out the shit kicking that he got. Because it was one of the ones that he took a shit kicking for like the first couple of minutes. He still had his vest on and all that sort of thing.
Do not get me wrong. I'm in full agreement with you. This is not Scott Hall's fault.
No.
And I say that as Austin Mark, 8, number one, you know, he's my favourite wrestler of all time. But this is probably your first time where you can see what, you know, you can see that something's not right and something might be coming down the road where, you know, things aren't what they should be. Let's just leave it at that.
But because at this point as well, Austin, because of the neck injury, and he is more limited than he had been, when he's not got as big of a repertoire as he once had, see if he can't be arsed doing half of it. You've got nothing. There's next to nothing left, and you're requiring our opponent to bump for the punches and allow a mud hole to be stomped and. You take umpteen stunners in a match because there is nothing else. You're not going to have the Steve Austin before the neck injury isn't coming back.
Austin at half speed or not giving a shit is not a pretty sight. I think that's a fair comment.
And as much as his peaks are very, very high, he's one of these guys that see when he can't be arsed, it's painful because. Even with thingy, even you saw with Hogan at SummerSlam, when Michaels could be arsed, he took the piss out of Hulk Hogan and did everything he could to show Hogan up. Austin showed himself up because he just couldn't be arsed.
Yes. After the match, we then get a review of Access Weekend. Which usually, you know, I could just take a leave, but this one did have the comedy value, Callum. I don't know if you noticed it, of the woman crying when she met The Undertaker. And that still makes me chuckle.
Cry.
Yeah, that's maybe just the sadist in me.
I don't think this is the one. Is it this year or is it the year before? or possibly the year after, that Lita is signing an autograph for a young AJ Brooks at one point.
I did not know that.
There is a WrestleMania access where it shows you a young girl going up and Lita is autographing something for her, and she is in floods of tears, and it is the artist soon to be known as AJ Lee.
I like the fact you called her AJ Brooks as well. That was very good.
Oh, you know, because that's not keeping kayfabe alive. Well, maybe, because he brought her up at one point.
And what I will say, as we are recording this, she may or may not be a Hall of Famer this year. She may or may not.
I wonder who's going to induct her.
Covering all my... Well, if she is or isn't. So we've got to cover our bases here.
Possibly, yeah.
Because as we at time of recording, they've already announced a female induction. So,
ooh, yeah, knack-a-knack-a-no.
They can't have two of the same of that sex. What's well,
that? the one thing I can, there's very few things you can guarantee in this business that we call professional wrestling. One of them, at one point, ironically enough, was CM Punk would never return to the WWE. Look at us now. But at this point, I can almost guarantee you that she is not the female that's going to be turning up at big business or at any AEW event in the very near future.
Well, I wonder who you could be on about. Ooh.
I still think that you're looking too much into this. It is going to be, when is it? Next week?
Next Wednesday is yeah. We record this.
What do businesses do? They make it rain money. That's going to be okay. It's good. You're going to be so disappointed when all it means is it's going to be Okada's first match on Dynamite. You've been waiting for this since Wembley. You've been waiting for this for almost a year, and it's just going to be a big turd because it's just going to be Okada's first match on Dynamite.
Yeah, because that Okada guy is so shit. what have they done just that again?
It's just better than the last signing they had. Speaking of fucking Team GB gymnastics.
Speaking of Lita, her tag team, the Hardy Boys, are in our next match, as it is another title match, this time the tag team titles, which pit the challengers, the said Hardy Boys, against the Dudleys, the APA, and the champions, who are Billy and Chuck. This is Elimination Rules. The Dudleys are played to ringside by Saliva. Lita, of course, not with the Hardys tonight, as she has a title match later on. Now, my last note for this match, Callum, reads, this should either have been just a one-fall contest or a tables extreme match, because this was just four teams. I mean, talk about going through the motions.
Yeah, I mean, so they've obviously thought that the previous 2 years had multi-team matches for the tag team titles, and they thought, that's the formula, put more than two teams in it, not let's have like lots of plunder. I think the matches are only as memorable as they were because they were TLC and ladder matches, not the fact that there was three teams in them. I remember this one because I look back. So the APA, I did remember that the APA were number one contenders after No Way Out. So we left No Way Out. Billy and Chuck, the Dudley Boys and the Hardy Boys had all been beaten in the tag team turmoil, and the APA won the tag team turmoil to be number one contenders to the tag team champions, Spike Dudley and Taz, both of whom are not in a match in that show. At some point, Billy and Chuck win the titles. I do remember watching that. It was a match on Raw. I do somehow remember watching. And the Dudley Boys and the Hardy Boys somehow end up in this match as well. I don't know how it happened. I don't know why it happened. Probably better than this match, to be fair, as nondescript as it was, probably is going to be better than the APA against Spike Dudley and Taz. You know, your mileage on that may vary, but that's my opinion. But then the APA, who you just made a big deal of, get a big prominent number one contenders win on your last pay-per-view, not 4 weeks before this, are out within the first 5 minutes.
Mm.
And what's the point? And then you're stuck. And then, with the best will in the world, we've seen the Hardy Boys and the Dudley Boys. We've seen the Hardy Boys and the Dudley Boys at WrestleMania. It's getting to the point that you, the brand split was probably the best thing that happened to those two teams, because the Hardys and the Dudley Boys were getting to the point that they're past their sell by date. There is only so many times you can run it back. As sort of sacrilegious as that might sound for the tag team division at this point in time, but yeah, it was there. I don't actually have many notes in this at all, other than the fact that it should have been Billy and Chuck that got the live entrance, because that song is a banger. I have actually got a note, go get whatever is left of NSYNC at the time. I know Justin had fucked off, but get whoever's left. Get Joey Fatone, and the other three guys.
Yeah, you kids wouldn't have been doing anything at this point. They could have joined in.
They could have done MKOTB. But no, Donny Don was probably, he was away acting at this point. So you've got, so you've got whatever's left of NSYNC. It's like, thingy, it's going to be like, what's their face? Boys Life, or whatever it is. It's like Brian McFadden and the guy, Keith, from Boyzone.
Another target for everybody.
get Joey Fatone from NSYNC. Get whatever Carter was in the Backstreet Boys.
A couple of Backstreet Boys there.
A couple of Backstreet Boys. Get one of the new kids on the block. Just get like a 1990s boy band supergroup. Do you know what? Fling want to take that in there as well. Get Jason Orange. He's doing nothing at this time. Get him in there. Mark Owen was in Big Brother and was one of them. No, it was the guy Keith that was in Coronation Street. Not want to take that. Get Jason Orange in there. Who else have we got?
I mean, we are many years away from the celebrity reality show TV surge, aren't we, at this point? So, yeah, they'd have just been all sitting at home doing not much.
Exactly. If they can have... An MTV reality show to find the new lead singer of NXS. They could have had a reality TV show to get the best, like a supergroup of the 1990s boy bands to do purely because MTV had done Tough Enough and they still had Sunday Night Heat. You could have had get a new. That's it.
Go on.
MTV, the new lead singer of NSYNC to replace Justin Timberlake to do WrestleMania to sing in Billy and Chuck and swerve, bro. Justin Timberlake wanted to do it so bad he rejoined NSYNC and won the competition.
Callum is the booker of all of MTV.
Swerve, bro.
Just write that down. Write that down. Mm-hmm. We're 22 years past, but you we can are. Still make it happen.
We are.
So after the match, which the Billy and Chuck win, so they keep the tag titles. We head backstage where the outsiders are complaining about Austin, and who can blame them? And promise to take their frustrations out on The Rock tonight. Hulk Hogan comes in and demands that he wants The Rock one-on-one for himself, but they can have as much of The Rock as they can take after the match. The NWO begrudgingly agree, but basically they say, yeah, we'll be coming out at some point anyway. But somewhere else backstage, Molly Holly is now running away, but the top half of a door hits her. It's revealed that Christian is the one who pushed the door into her face, and he becomes the new hardcore champ. All this leads to our next match, which is between Hulk Hogan and The Rock. One of the most legendary matches in WrestleMania history. You have wrestling's past versus wrestling's present. Very rare that you'll have a generational contest like this, but it sometimes happens. And this is obviously one of those occasions. Callum, probably one of the most difficult matches I've ever had to rate. Is this contest?
Yeah, absolutely. This is one of these ones. There's very, very few matches like this. You're probably looking at The Rock against Cena as another one, and Hogan Andre the first one at three, where the spectacle almost overtakes the match itself. I think this is one of the ones that, if you listen back to some of the early episodes of No Holds Barred, I don't know if it's going to be the ones that are on the PTB archives or over on the No So archives, but it was one of these ones that Aaron and JT were arguing that this match and Hogan Andre were 5 stars because of everything about them. And I am tending to agree with it. I'll just put it out there just now. I have rated this one 5 stars because, is the match good? Yeah, it's better than some of the stuff we've seen tonight or talked about tonight. Is the match perfect? No. But what it is perfect professional wrestling. Everything about it, the crowd were in the palm of their hand from the minute that the static went off in the NWO entrance. Because straight away, the music stops and you can hear it wasn't even Julian, Rocky and Hogan chants. They were just shouting over each other. It was just a sea of just noise. And these two guys, for them to realise that the crowd wasn't, I don't know why. Maybe they didn't. Maybe they had a fair idea that the crowd was going to do this, and they didn't think that Hogan was going to, even though they had, and they talked about it on the commentary, that they had attempted murder on The Rock 2 weeks before. JR brings it up. Is it nostalgia? Love him or hate him? Hollywood Hogan is one of the biggest stars ever. I think they knew. I wonder if they had an inclination that the crowd might go towards Hogan. And fair play to The Rock, he leaned into that. Maybe Hollywood Rock before Hollywood Rock, and they just let it go, and they just went with it. And Hogan is Hogan, right? It's not. Bell to bell, you're very, very, very unlikely to get a 5-star classic. And probably the same with Rock. If he's in with the right guy, you might get a 5-star classic out of him. But the best will in the world, I don't think he was ever going to drag Hogan to a 5-star classic. But everything about this was just the pinnacle of what professional wrestling is. And it was a stop what you're doing and watch. And for that, I think it has to be 5 stars.
I hear you. I'm going to go slightly lower. I'm not turning into a Mitch guy. You know I'm not a Mitch guy, but it's the actual. If you take the noise out, the match isn't that good. But you've obviously got to have it. It's not. I'm not gonna. You can't say it like that. This crowd is fantastic during this match. And what I really like about the match, actually, just talking about the match, is how Hogan almost blends into, from, using the Hollywood stereotypical moves and the 80s Hogan moves. So, the example I'm going to use is using the weight belt and then hulking up to 5 minutes later. It's some beautiful storytelling throughout the match. But if this crowd wasn't losing their shit like it is, would it be fondly remembered like as it is? No, it wouldn't. But I tend to agree with you, where the crowd, it's one of those examples of the crowd making the match.
Watching this match, but if I was to watch this match back on mute, all it's going to be, with the best will in the world, is a typical Hogan match. As you say, your first half is Hollywood Hogan, second half is red and white Hogan, and a lot of stalling. Bell to bell, it's not anything to write home about. Bell to bell, it's not one of the worst matches on the card, but it's certainly not tipping one of the best. But when you it goes back to I think we said it a lot, because the two of us and Rory have been talking about our, as we always tend to bring up, the epic 10 three-part 10-hour GWWE Top 100.
Was it 10 hours?
It flew by. Three part, four recording episodes. I do remember that. We had to do one. It was so long, we had to do two, one of them over two sessions. But we'd mentioned how it was like a two-star match, five-star package. It wasn't specifically this match. There was another match that we talked about. I think it might have been Hogan and Andre. Like, you're putting it in the top 10, top 20. Because it was a 1.5-star match because Andre couldn't move. But it was a five-star package because of everything it was. Everything it meant at the time and everything it means now. And just everything leading up to it. And this is this falls into that category. Is it Bret and Austin level of match? No. Nowhere close. Not even in the same stratosphere. But does it have the importance and the aura of a Hogan Andre? Absolutely.
Is it one of the best matches of all time? No, it isn't. Is it one of the most important matches of all time and a match that every wrestling fan has to see at least once? Yes. Yes, it is.
Our Lord and Saviour, Cody Devonte Rhodes.
Oh, hey.
Shout out to the Godfather, give him his full Sunday name, in honour of the Godfather. Cody calls this the greatest match of all time. And I think it's for the reason, because it encompasses everything, all the good. And I think we've said this a lot between ourselves and with Rory on the special relations. See when they get it. See when it's good. See when wrestling is good. It's brilliant. And this was like when everything comes together right. It is fantastic. And this is one of these things where everything is right. And if you want to show, I think Cody sees it from, if you want to show somebody what it is to be a pro wrestling fan, or wanting somebody to come up and say, this is what you need to aspire to. This is one of, if not one of the greatest examples of it.
Even though I gave a 3-star match wrestling match rating, that's by the by, it's sports entertainment at its finest.
Yes.
And I will also say, speaking of our Lord and Saviour, Mr. Cody Rhodes, isn't it ironic that some 22 years later, Rock appears to be playing the Hogan role coming up? where he's gonna be ostensibly the heel, but probably cheered out the building come WrestleMania.
could well be. Although in this instance, I can't foresee an instance where they're going to flip flop it. Given that it's now a 2-night spectacle, where they're going to flip flop it, and Cody has to work heel because we saw how well that worked in Jacksonville.
They're not going to flip. They're not going to do that. But they're just going to make everybody sit through these guys for, you know, when you've got a big match on the Sunday night, you make them work the night before, don't you? That seems reasonable.
seems fair enough.
That's not going to cut out the risk of anybody getting injured or anything, is it?
Say that, well, The Rock's probably the biggest, given the fact that every match he's had since he came back in 2012, he's had some form of hamstring pull. But even like we're talking about, so John Cena played the Hogan role at SummerSlam a couple of years back. One of the ones they did, it was like a post-COVID one. They did it. It was a stadium. It was the first one they did in a stadium. I can't remember where it was. The first one they did at a stadium, and it never came close to the aura that this had.
Exactly. It goes without saying, but go out your way to watch it. Just if for some bizarre reason you've not seen it, or you've not seen it for a few years, just go back and watch it. And then you can just pretend like it's 22 years ago and you're still at college and school and enjoying yourself. And that's what wrestling's all about, kids. None of this tribalism. Just enjoy yourself for half an hour. Get me making a deep philosophical point.
I know. What I should have done was, if I really wanted the 2002 experience, was watch a wee bit in the morning, then go to work, and then watch the rest of it when I came home.
Yes. But you can clip that up, Callum, because that, you know, that's quite good. That's quite that for me is quite good.
I think so. It shows that, you know, you're not just like any AEW fan, Ben. You're a Marks and Spencer's AEW fan.
Well, yeah.
You're not quite there. There was an absolute lunatic I saw. There was an absolute lunatic I saw. There's just no other word for it on Twitter the other day, and I was just like, I can't even remember what he said, but it was certifiably insane. And it was things like that give people like Ben a bad name.
Well, you know, as I've always said, I try to be fair, and if something is good, I will say if it's good. If something is bad or doesn't interest me, I will say that as well. You know, if you're going with blinkers all the time, you know, you're just basically having an echo chamber, aren't you?
Yes, there is. Yeah, there is that. And you know, you were shouting as loud as anyone when we were in Cardiff. Up to the main event, and then, you know, I did take over somewhat.
Well, I had a thoroughly good time in Cardiff, that was why.
Yes, well, it was good up until the last hour or so.
Until the last 10 minutes or so, yes, yeah. Both the match and the post match singing, yes.
Yeah. Fuck Solo Sikoa.
Normal service will be resumed this year with my Uso hate. Don't worry, that's going to be coming out loud. We had a 1 year lifting of it because for the last WrestleMania, but nah, not this year. Sorry, guys.
it was a good run.
it was good while it lasted, man. After the match, Rock and Hogan shake hands. The Outsiders hit the ring and attack Hogan, which causes the Rock to run back to defend his hero's honor. They take out both Outsiders, and after the beating, Rock wants Hogan to hit the poses for the crowd, and then they leave together. Good, like I said, Callum, good wholesome entertainment here. Just lovely moment after lovely moment.
Yes, and and what a way for the show closing match to finish. I mean, the WrestleMania ends on Hogan and Rock must pose, brother. What a way to end. Get the wee copyright thing up and let's pack up and head home.
Callum, I hate to tell you this, but there's another hour of the show. Two matches, in fact, still to go.
Well, isn't this embarrassing because I don't have notes for them?
We'll just have a general chat. It's what the people like, apparently.
It's what they come to see.
Exactly. We head to WWE New York, where the Big Show is really earning the money from that big contract he signed by lifting a small child up in the air. I see. You know, if that's the way you earn your money, Callum, that's going to be the definition of easy money right there.
Oh, I mean, anyone whose WrestleMania paycheck comes from an appearance at WWF New York, they're the real winners tonight. they're the real main event. They're the real champions.
As I mentioned right at the beginning of the show, the Fink announces at this point that the attendance tonight is 68,237. And like I keep saying, sometimes you see these numbers and you don't believe that there's that many people in the crowd. Callum, I think it's fair to say that 68,000 was pretty legit, because this is, as Gorilla and Jesse would say, this is a happening.
It was a happening, and they were hanging from the rafters. They were. They couldn't fit. I mean, they fit as many people into that stadium that night as they possibly could. I mean, fire regulations were being broken. There was that many people in. I mean, the guy who was the fire marshal at the ECW arena didn't have a harder task as making sure that this place was safe, because they just packed as many. It was like, you know these things you see like a Japanese bullet train where they're just forcing people on. Yeah, that's what they did that night. They hired guys from Japan, from the metro station in Tokyo, to push more people into this arena.
You see a Japanese bullet train, but here's another Target reference. Just go on any train in the UK and just see how they squash everybody in at certain points of the day.
Oh, talking about Cardiff, that's what me and the good lady were like, because they had there was a strike on, and Transport for Wales actively put on less trains when there's an event happening at the Millennium Stadium, or the Principality, excuse me. Having been there 3 times in my life, every single time there is a 2-carriage train going from like Crewe or Birmingham to Cardiff when there's a thing on in Cardiff.
So cutting out the train that took us back from Cardiff to Newport, you would expect to stand up at that point because everybody's trying to get back home or go back to where they would be. That's fair enough. But I had to get six trains, you know, there and back. I only got to sit down in two of them. That tells you how good our train system is.
That's probably about right. Yeah, I managed to get a seat. So I was standing from Crewe to Abergavenny, which even as a Target reference for me, being British, I don't know how far that was, but it felt like fucking miles.
that would be fair, to be fair.
Yeah. I then sat down for a disabled man to come on, and I thought, well, I need to give this seat right back up again. And you know what? I stood from Abergavenny to fucking Newport.
I was sat down.
My geography is not the best, but Crewe to Newport is half the country, I felt like. And I was sat down for approximately 35 seconds of that journey.
It's a good 2-3 hours.
I felt every minute of it.
Like we say, we've got to do some general chit-chat, because sadly Callum's not made it. No, I'm only joking. He has made some things. Let's get to the second last match of the night, which is the fifth of our 6 title matches, and it's for the women's title, which pits Lita and Trish Stratus against the champion Jazz. Callum, my opening note reads, the very definition of a cooldown match.
Yes, I mean, this is the death spot of all death spots. We've just raved about how this was one of the greatest segments of a professional wrestling show ever, and now these three girls have to go out and, I mean, this is probably at this point in time the three best wrestlers they've had in a while in the women's division. And these are three women that could go, and Lita and Trish are still going. We're still going up until last year. This was just so unfortunate. Somebody has to do it. But they were on an absolute hiding to nothing with this one. The one way to get your crowd back, even though it was a cool down, the one way to keep your crowd hot for the main event, which desperately needs a hot crowd, is have the hometown girl win, and they didn't do that.
Yeah, not just the hometown girl, but the hometown girl wearing a very hotchy outfit. More of that later, but yes. And you know, you think about it, the hometown girl who, you know, is the former champion, who, you know, the whole, you know, storyline leading into this would be the former champion gets her belt back, but no, we can't do that. We can't do that.
No, we give you that. Yeah, I mean, we've given you Edge winning. I mean, come on. let's not get too hasty here, guys.
We even made sure to tell you that Christian's from Tampa now.
Exactly. We have two Canadians win tonight. I will say that,
having said that, they picked the wrong choice of winner, that fisherman suplex off the ropes, and my last note does read, that suplex gets a star on its own, because that was superb.
It was, I mean, fair play to them again. They were given like 5-6 minutes, and they did 5-6 minutes was difficult enough to showcase like two guys at the start. You're now adding a third person in there. They did what they could with the time they were given, and so you do something like that, it makes it memorable, and it's a WrestleMania moment, TM.
When did they actually? There's a question. When did they actually start with the WrestleMania moments thing? Instead of like, you know, That's a subject for another podcast, but I'm just thinking out loud now.
It was probably WrestleMania 20 or WrestleMania 25. It was certainly around their anniversary.
Was it?
Talking about WrestleMania moments.
I think WrestleMania 20 maybe, because definitely Foley 22 goes on that he's never had a WrestleMania moment. I remember that.
So there you go. So it must be that, because then the year after.
Yeah, I think you're right with 20. I think that sounds about right.
And then was the thing, it was the year after, was Randy Orton's WrestleMania moment was breaking the streak.
Yes.
Might have been the sweet spot there.
Look at that, us answering a question on the fly. I mean, this is unheard of.
It's like Holmes and Watson.
So after the match, we then head outside the Sky Dome where Christian is leaving the building, but Maven is able to sneak up behind him and pin him, which makes the whole hardcore shenanigans of the evening totally meaningless. Callum, I know, like we say, you want to get guys on the show, and I understand that, but we could have saved a lot of time here with these 10, 15 minutes and given them to three other matches to make them, you know, good to great. Or is that just me being picky?
No, you're probably right. You could have put all this in a 10-minute segment of its own at the start, and then you're not cutting back and forward to it. You do have some good moments. You've got the hurricane flying in like a superhero. You have Molly turning on him. You have Christian kissing the belt and then being utterly repulsed because it's Mankey. And at the end of the time, you get Maven like triumphantly stealing Christian's car. I mean, we focus on the fact that he won the match. What we're not dealing, I mean, there's theft. Christian's bags in the back of that car, and it might even be. It might even be Christian's car, which if it is Christian's car, who's driving and why is Maven hanging out the back of it? He's not even looking where he's going if he's driving. In fact, no, Maven was on the driver's side because I imagine Canada drives on the other side of the road as well. Maven's reckless.
And ironically, as we're talking here, you know, on a previous episode of that other wrestling promotion that he's in, Christian has become a car thief. So, you know, it's truly the circle of life just appearing amongst us.
What's old is new again.
Well, you can say that. You can certainly say that about Edge's face. Or, oh, I said it.
Oh, damn.
Oh. Now, we've kind of mentioned the fact that this crowd has shot its bolt during the Hogan Rock match. But there is an actual main event tonight, and it is for the undisputed World Heavyweight Championship. And it features the champion, Chris Jericho, taking on the challenger, Triple H. For those of you who haven't watched this match in a while, I've got a new drinking game for you, which is take a drink every time JR and the King make some sort of reference to Triple H's quad hanging by a thread. And you'll get very merry by the end of the match, let me tell you. Also, this is probably the hottest that Steph has ever looked in that electric blue jumpsuit that she was wearing. Callum, main event, this should be, you know, once again epic, but this was giving me major WrestleMania 25 vibes when it was Triple H and Orton. This match was just so dull and just an example of them not reading the company not reading the room.
Yeah, I mean, this was obviously somebody, and I will defend Triple H more than most. I mean, I did, as we say, at this time, I was still in market chief, like, you know, massive markdom. But even I knew that Triple H's reign of terror in 2002 and 2003 was a bit shit. But I'll defend them more than most. Maybe not as much as the boss, as the old boy father, but certainly more than most. But this was... just absolute the worst of pulling his weight. Vince doesn't care really if the title goes on last. He set that precedent with WrestleMania 11. The title doesn't need to go on last if there's something that is bigger than that. Because let's be honest, at 11 they had Shawn and Diesel go on before Bam Bam Bigelow and an NFL player. Triple H and Jericho could have gone on before The Rock and Hollywood Hulk Hogan. Let's be honest. But this would have been Triple H pulling his weight. Something terrible. And it just... I think even in his heart of hearts, he then, with the hindsight being 2020, he will know that was an issue. And that was the wrong decision to make. This match could have been... The match itself was fine. Again, not great. Not the worst match you've ever seen in your life. Perfectly, perfectly good. Perfectly good match. But horribly placed. It was on a... After The Rock and Hogan, it was on a hiding to nothing. Again, I'm saying this with hindsight being 2020. The Rock and Hogan could have absolutely just been the worst thing ever. And like they sandbagged each other and they didn't want to. And the whole spectacle could have been ruined if they didn't want to play ball with each other. But they didn't. And then you've got these two guys are then on a hiding to nothing after that. You wanted to finish with... See, when you see these things where Triple H raises the belts at the end of the match and you see the video on it, nobody knows when it happened. It could have happened at the start of the show. There's no timestamp on it. It doesn't say main event. You can still call it a main event. They've been doing that for years now. It wasn't a big practice at this point. But who was on the poster? Who was on every single WrestleMania poster was Hogan and The Rock. So there's no need for this to be last. And I think for that, I think it's a common complaint of it, but it's everything about this match was ruined by the fact that it was in front of a crowd that had been, that were gassed from what happened at half an hour to an hour before. And they were just, it was never going to work.
You mentioned WrestleMania 11, but that match was, you know, you had two best friends going at each other, one of which decided to go into business for himself, but to the benefit of the match, because not only was he making himself look good, but it was going to make the match look good. Whereas this match was just slow and plodding. I mean, one of my notes does read, if you like legwork, then this is the match for you. People talk about, you know, Triple H cosplaying Ric Flair, but my God, he was basically playing Dusty in this match, wasn't he, with the amount of legwork that Jericho was doing.
Oh, this is totally Dusty with thingy. This is Dusty Flair, Starrcade 85. He's come in with the broken leg and the specially made cowboy boot and all that sort of thing. Triple H clearly always wanted to be, as much as he was born in the Northeast and grew up in the Northeast, he always wanted to be an NWA World Heavyweight Champion.
Yeah.
As it showed when he won the big gold belt and acted like an NWA World Heavyweight Champion. But the thing was, like, it's not as if Jericho and Triple H are notoriously hate each other. I thought for everything that you hear, I think they always got on pretty well. But I just think they were powerless to do anything. I don't even think any audible that they could have called. Given the fact that, the build up to this match hinged on Triple H having a bum wheel, they were then hamstrung by that storyline crutch. And whatever audible they had was never going to bring this crowd back. So they just had to run with it.
Mm.
And you get the feel-good moment that Triple H has come back from this horrific injury that then that Chris Jericho was then worked on for the best part of, you know, 15-20 minutes to get the feel-good moment. But it was just, they were on a hiding to nothing. It was just nothing they could have done was going to... It's not WrestleMania 10 where you have like an hour to an hour and a half between two five-star classics. This was like half an hour after one of the best matches, one of the best presentations and segments of a wrestling show ever. They were just stinging. It was never going to work.
When we were talking about Hogan Rock, I said, didn't I, you know, turn the volume down and this is just a match. With this, turn the volume down and this is still the same plodding, boring match it is with the crowd. Who's turned up, because the crowd do not give single shit. They're chanting Hogan at various points during this.
But also, like, And again, I hark back to things that we've said. I need to get to, obviously, need to get the special relations up on YouTube very quickly so they get all these references that we're talking about. But we always said, and many of the episodes, we said, the fact that it is... what's the word I'm looking for?
It's not rocket science.
Well, it's not rocket science. But the fact that it's predictable doesn't mean it's bad. Just because you know what the ending's going to be, doesn't mean that it's going to be bad, because you've still got the two guys could have an excellent journey to get there.
Wrestling fans are sadly conditioned for the swerve. And
there is that.
Sometimes, just run on linear booking works. It's why, I'm going to say, that's why I'm such a fan of AEW, because they don't do swerves that much. They did one last night, but that's it. You know what I mean? That's the exception.
I gave you a compliment of not being the average AEW fan, and you hit me with this hypocrisy.
The point I'm making is that was a swerve last night, but it's not like the swerving every week or every month, is it?
No, but I think when it comes to rest, we're also conditioned that the returning hero will always triumph, and especially at WrestleMania, where the hero will always triumph at the end. Apart from the last couple of years, granted, and when Triple H won in 2000, so you knew that Triple H was going to win, but they can still get you with an excellent journey to get you there.
Yeah,
and the journey that they gave us was bang average.
Absolutely. Making it bang average, I went 2.5, which is right in the middle.
Which is also what I went.
There we go. What's the word I'm looking for? We make this podcast, work. We know exactly what we're going to say because it works like that. We are in sync. A second in sync. Well,
there we go.
In sync with an eye
and no star.
To end the night, we have a video package that we're not going to talk about because I think we've talked everything that's in the video package we have basically talked about tonight. So that is the end of the show, but it's not the end of our show because we have some awards to give out. So Callum, I think we all know the answer to this, but what was the best match of the night?
I'm not even going to make the cursory joke of picking one of the early ones. I think the Rock and Hulk Hogan. It's just perfection. It's chef's kiss perfection.
Yeah. I think I've got same rating on other matches, but it's got to be that. Yeah. Worst match of the night?
This is a hard pushed one. I am minded. It's a toss up between Austin and Hall and The Undertaker and Flair. I am minded to go Undertaker, and no, I can't because of the iron spot. Austin Hall.
I went Austin Hall as well, so yeah, clean sweep there. The most surprising match of the night, surprising of course, meaning surprisingly good or surprisingly bad.
I think it's going to need to be a tie for me. Flair and Taker and Austin and Hall were matches that I remember being all right, and I was shocked at how much worse they were watching it this time round.
I've got the same reasoning, but I have picked Booker and Edge.
Well, that's a good shout as well.
We're not talking two newbies here. We're not talking, we're talking guys who are well established at this point, both as tags and singles wrestlers. And for whatever reason, it just didn't work.
Yeah, it's a disappointing one.
Shit take of the night. Now, I will say, like I said, there's been a few disparities between our ratings, but we've been able to explain them through, and I don't think there's any outright disagreeing with each other. Like we can both see where the other person's coming from, at least.
Oh yeah, I agree with that.
So I was mentioning the shit taker. We never, and I can't even remember the last time we awarded it out, because like we're almost in agreement with each other all the time.
Yeah, I think it was the anniversary show the last time, and I can hazard a guess as to why that was.
So fashion statement of the night. I went with Trish and Steph equally. And I think you might be able to guess why.
Yes, honourable mention to Stacey and to Chris Jericho.
Yes, I forgot about Stacey and the cargo pants. Yes, yes, yes. That was a look.
And Chris Jericho was looking very dapper tonight as well.
He really was. He really was. And of course, the final award of the evening, is this show chicken salad or chicken shit?
It's a difficult one, because see, you take the Rock Hogan out of it, and you're probably looking at a solid B show pay per view. It would be a good pay per view, and I'm only saying that because you wouldn't have the Rock Hogan. You only say take that out because you wouldn't have that on a B show. You're looking at, this was a good pay per view. It wasn't a good WrestleMania.
Yes,
if that makes sense.
That's
so
fair.
I think you would need to. Given that it is the biggest show of the year, I think you would need to put it into chicken shit, in all honesty.
Given the embarrassment of riches behind it, I think it's probably one of the most disappointing WrestleManias there has been.
Yes, that's a very good way of putting it. Because if you look at the guys that we've talked about, RVD, William Regal, Christian, Kane, Angle, Taker, Flair, Edge, Booker, Austin Hall, Rock and Hogan, you've got Hardy Boys, Triple H, Chris Jericho, you've got every major star you can think of. You should have been able to put together a better show than this.
Yeah, I said it earlier about the Rock and Hogan match, but you have, like, that list you just mentioned, you have got wrestling's past, you've got wrestling's present, and the future. You know, the class of 2002 are coming, but pretty much a lot of these people are still around for that whole Ruthless Aggression period.
But you're looking at this, and every single match in here has got somebody who is in the Hall of Fame or will be in the Hall of Fame at some point.
Yes.
And they should have produced something better than this. This doesn't get, like, one of these throwaway matches that this get, like, fucking Bobby Heenan against the Red Rooster, where they had as much time as they wanted to put in, and like, or you've got Savio Vega against Waylon Mercer. This is WrestleMania with Hall of Famers up and down this card, and they should have come up with something better than they did. It's really, really disappointing, as you say.
I'm going to read what I wrote for once. I don't usually do that this often during the awards, but I will read what I wrote here. Total one match show, so your feelings on that will dictate how you feel about things. So I think this is just salad, because like you say, it's one of the best presented matches of all time, and that 30 minutes almost pretty much outweigh all the shit that's on here. But there is nothing apart from the Toronto crowd that is actually outstanding on the show, but there is nothing egregiously bad either. So if you look at my actual star rating window, it goes from one star to three. There's nothing else, you know. There's no duds on here, but there's no, for me, I know you gave the Hogan match five stars, but there's no four or five star classic on here match wise.
Yeah, it's one of these ones. I think we are quite lucky in the fact that the network here, until it goes on to Netflix later in the year, has got the timestamps that we can fire up WrestleMania 18, and we can go straight to Hogan versus The Rock.
Yes.
Having to what not knowing where it would be on this, I mean, you can guess roughly, but having to sit through this just to get to Hogan Rock would be a bit of a slog. It felt like that watching, and I think that's the only reason for it. If you take that match away, you're looking at you're potentially looking at one of the worst WrestleManias ever.
To mangle a Simpsons quote, chapters. It's all about the chapters. if you know the line, you know the line. So, Callum, anything that you'd like to plug, anything that you'd like to send the good ladies and gentlemen to while you're here?
Yes, just the Place to Be Nation YouTube channel. We do have, by the time this comes out, we will have just finished the full run of Highway to the Impact Zone. We are up to date with that now, so when the new episode drops on the feed, that will drop on YouTube as well. We've got daily motherships, and for just now we've got actually the full run, or we're in the middle of the run of the Kevin Kelly show as well. That's dropping every day. That will be preempted if there's a new if there's something new dropping on the an up-to-date one that we've already got. But Kevin Kelly show will be out every day. So that's youtube.com/@PTB Wrestling.
I know Scott and JT have mentioned this before, so I'm not saying anything out of turn or nothing that they said, but that Kevin Kelly show was one huge missed opportunity, wasn't it? Look at the wrestling, looking at the podcast landscape as we do now.
Yeah, and I think there was, he tried it again, till New Japan put the kibosh on that briefly. But looking at the first seven episodes that we put up, he talked with, now this was back in 2014, the first seven episodes that we have, now this will all be on the YouTube page. Episode one was Adam Cole, episode two was AJ Styles, episode three was Hansen, who's now Ivar in the WWE, episode four was Mike Bennett, one of the episodes was Zach Gowen, who was like, well, I'm sure we'll cover here at some point, because we will need to do Vengeance 03 for one of the good shows. what is now a who's who of professional wrestling today? Kevin Kelly interviewed on the Place to Be Wrestling feed back in 2014 and 2015.
I was going to say, that is not the worst lineup in the world.
No. So go back on that. I think there's a good, the Kevin Kelly show will be running for a good couple of months. I think there was about 70 odd episodes, so there will be loads of them, so please come back and listen to that. So they're the first ones to drop, so if you're listening Eastern time, they drop in the morning, so they drop 12 hour time, Ben, so that's going to be 7 in the morning Eastern time. 7 in the morning Eastern time, so you can have that with your breakfast. There's then the mothership will drop 5 o'clock Eastern time, so that's something you have for your dinner. And then lunchtime will be whatever is the archive pod of the day, which has just been Highway to Impact Zone, as we said. I've not yet decided. That's a decision for the weekend as to what we are going to put on after. But yeah, I've got it up here. So your first seven episodes that have dropped as of today, as of we're recording: Adam Cole, AJ Styles, Hansen, Mike Bennett, Adam Pearce, Zach Gowen, and Steve Carino. So that's a who's who of all guys that are working, with the exception of Zach Gowen at the minute, all guys that are working with either AEW or the WWE at this point in time.
Yeah, that is some great content, Callum. Great content. You can catch me on a regular basis on the aforementioned Highway to the Impact Zone. We are just getting past Genesis 2006, so we are into the Angle Joe series and all that good stuff as well. And I'll plug it, even though it's been out a little while. I was on Nation Invasion with our good friend Groody. I had a very interesting / good time. No, it wasn't good, Groody. I'm only teasing you, mate. But no, it was. We did have fun. So for Callum McDougall, I'm Ben Locke, and remember, everybody, in a world where you can be anything that you want to be kind. Thank you so much for listening to Chicken Salad, and we will see you again next month.
7.0. Looking at life through the eyes of a tire hub. Eating seeds is a pastime activity. The toxicity of our city, of our city. No!